But it's what they call a God of the gaps argument. It's pushing God into the few remaining gaps in our understanding. Before Darwin came along, the whole of life was one big gap, one gigantic gap. And now we're pushed back to the origin of life, this chemical event, and that is a gap which will be filled. Even if it isn't filled, it would be bad logic, bad science, bad philosophy to say, oh, I don't understand it, therefore God did it. I mean, that's a pathetically bad piece of arguing.
Richard just explained why religious faith gets in the way of science. And you know what? He has a point. And his point is not well heard. It's not well examined by religious people. In order to examine a rational argument fairly, you have to be committed to the truth. You have to be committed to following the evidence wherever it may lead to. That means that you articulate the position of your opponent in the strongest and clearest way possible. You agree with him on as many points as you can, and you only disagree where you have clear evidence that he's wrong. That's what we're going to do. So the objection that Richard is articulating is called the God of the Gaps objection. This is an argument, and the argument looks like this. I'll frame it first in the context of evolution. That's the language in which he framed it. And then I'll generalize it. So in the language of evolution, it looks like this. Either God made the design in living things, or evolution made the design in living things. That's the first premise. Evolution made the design in living things. That's the second premise. And it follows from that that God did not make the design in living things. This is called, in classical logic, a disjunctive syllogism. The first premise, we affirm to a disjunction, either this or this. And in the second premise, you affirm or deny one of the two disjunctions. And since only one of the two can be true or false at a particular time, if you affirm or deny one, you can work out the truth or falsehood of the other. Now, we can generalize the argument from evolution to any other law of nature. We can talk about gravity and the motion of planets around the sun. We can talk about difference in air pressure beneath and above a wing and how that creates lift. So let's generalize evolution to laws of nature. We'll call it LON for short. And let's generalize design in living things to making contingent things in the universe the way that they are. You can now see why this is called a God of the Gaps objection. Either God made the contingent things in the universe the way that they are, or the laws of nature made them the way that they are. There's an opposition. There is a competition. So if you affirm that the laws of nature that science has discovered are responsible for making everything in the universe the way that it is, then the only place for God is a gap that you open up in the laws of nature. You say that the laws of nature can't explain this, therefore there's God. There's the gap for God. There's where God works. And there's a number of problems with this. Scientists say that it's a weak argument for the existence of God because with the progress of science, the unknown gaps progressively get filled in. And the job of science is to walk into the great unknown, to make discoveries, to say, I don't know, let me discover. So when a religious person comes and says, here's my gap for God, science, don't trespass, don't come here. In the context of the design argument, evolution, don't explain anything. This is design. Evolution doesn't work. Evolution is bad. When religious people do that, they get in the way of science. And Richard has a point. Richard has a point because when Christians try to blow the theory of evolution out of the water in order to prove the existence of God, in order to make room for God, then this is exactly what they're doing. many Christians who make intelligent design arguments for the existence of God are doing exactly this. And when Muslims follow them in their approach, they are doing the same thing. That's why I began 2 episodes ago by showing you why evolution does not disprove God, because it describes contingent relationships, and contingent things and contingent relationships can only exist through the existence of a necessary being. That's why I showed you in the last episode that evolution or any law of nature is actually evidence for the existence of God, because laws of nature describe contingent relationships. Science discovers more and more contingencies. And when you uncover more contingencies, you strengthen the argument from contingency. You don't weaken it. Just as if you have 1,000,000 dominoes, then there is even more need. There's 1,000,000 reasons why you need something supporting them. Whereas if you only have one, you only have one reason. We don't need gaps for God. In fact, the fewer gaps, the more contingencies, the more contingent things that we discover through science, the better. So let's go back to our argument. In the first premise, the disjunction is gone, because the laws of nature don't make the things in the universe the way that they are. The second premise is also gone for the same reason. Laws of nature don't do anything. Okay, I just got pulled over by my son, who told me that yesterday I was teaching him about ionic bonds and balancing chemical formulas. And if the laws of nature don't do anything, then what in the world was I teaching him? Well, the laws of nature, they describe relations between contingent things. They don't describe causal relationships. Okay, so I got pulled over again, and I was told that that's not the way that we experience the world when we do a science experiment. Let me tell you a story about a Russian scientist by the name of Ivan Pavlov. In the beginning of the 20th century, he had a number of dogs and he conducted scientific experiments with them. He would bring them food and he would notice that when he brought them food, they would salivate. So he decided to try something out. He brought them food one day, and as he brought them food, he rang a bell. The next day, he brought them food and he rang a bell. He continued this process for a while. And then one day he took the food away and he just rang the bell. What did he find? He found that the dogs were salivating. This is a famous scientific experiment. Scientists call this classical conditioning. It's learning by association. It's an animal instinct that all of us have within us. Just as the dogs ascribed causation to the bell that was regularly associated with the food, we ascribe causation to the contingent things in the universe that are regularly associated with each other. Just as the dog didn't realize that there was a scientist associating the bell and the food, a scientist who conducts a scientific experiment and ascribes a causal relationship, a true causal relationship between the cause and effect that he observes, doesn't realize that there is a necessary being that is making everything the way that it is. Okay, so I got pulled to the side again, and I think I need to make a clarification. So when I say that the scientist is like the dog, this is not an insult. It can be a scientist, it can be a non-scientist, it can be an atheist, it can be a Muslim, it can be anyone, it can be a human being. Human beings have a resemblance to the dog. This is not an insult, it's a fact. What's the resemblance? The resemblance is this instinctive animal reaction that's there in the dog, it's there in the horse, it's there in the lion, it's there in all animals. Animals respond instinctively, and we have that instinctive response within us. We have an instinctive tendency to ascribe causation to contingent things that are continuously, regularly associated. But we also stand out from the dog, from all other animals, in that we have a mind. We can reflect on the universe, and we can discern that all of these contingent things are being made the way that they are by a necessary being. The animals can't do that. We can do that. And that's why we have a mind. That's the purpose of the mind within us. The purpose of the mind within us is to go beyond the contingent things in the universe to discover the existence of God. Now, the claim that we have a purpose to our existence, the mind has a purpose, and that purpose is to discover God, is a claim that needs to be substantiated with evidence. And I'm going to do that in the episode after the next one. But what I'm going to do in the next episode is I'm going to emphasize some of the things that we learned in this episode. In this episode, we learned that belief in God does not require the creation of gaps in scientific inquiry. In fact, the fewer the gaps, the better and the stronger the case for God. In the next episode, I am going to show you that Richard makes an argument against the argument from design that commits him to this conclusion. If you benefited from this video, please help me spread this knowledge by liking this video, by subscribing to my channel, and by sharing this video with as many people as you can. You could change someone's life.